Professor Longhair there and Earl King. It's called Big Chief. As the sounds of New Orleans permeate current state here on Fat Tuesday, I'm Mark Bayshore. Thanks for joining us today. There's probably never been a time in history when there wasn't war and conflict going on somewhere in the world, but between the Arab Spring and the situation between Russia and Ukraine right now, it seems like an especially good time to talk to an expert on international conflict. Michael Colarisi is an associate professor in the Department of Political Science here at MSU, and he's responsible for a recent study that looks at what happens when outside countries get involved in civil wars. Michael Colarisi, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
The title of your study is, With Friends Like These, Who Needs Democracy? The Effect of Transnational Support from Rivals on Post-Conflict Democratization. Summarize for us in layman's terms what you looked at in this study.
Sure, of course. I've been interested for a while in actually how international civil wars actually are. They're very rarely just encapsulated in one state. And so I was interested in particularly how states, when they get involved in these civil wars, giving help to a rival side, right, or the government and the state, what effect that has, not just in the war and the killing and the destruction of the Civil War that's so tragic, but even longer term, after the Civil War ends, when we think about having a post-war democratic trajectory. And so what I found was it's not just, you know, lots of, these are very international things, and there's oftentimes states getting involved, but it's actually particularly states that we have to pay attention to, that when rival or enemy states use the Civil War as a means to their own ends, getting in the way of progress, creating distrust on the side. So, for example, I looked at the FSLN, which was a group in Nicaragua, the Sandinistas, which received help from Costa Rica, which was unpopular. They had a territorial dispute. And after they won, this was a very sort of unpopular alliance that was formed during the Civil War, and it changed the calculus after the Civil War of the government that they didn't really want to democratize because they were going to lose the next election, right? So why would you then have, you know, these winners that got there from unpopular means creating democratic institutions that are going to lead them to lose power? So that's what I was interested in. That's what the study explores, is those types of relationships.
How many different civil wars did you look at?
Sure. I looked at 136 civil wars, particularly the 10 years after each of those civil wars from 1946 up till 2007. Is when I stopped looking at the post-conflict settings.
Does that account for all of the civil wars in that period,
yeah,
or most of them, or what?
I'm an academic, so we like to disagree over definitions of things. So there's, you know, give or take a couple. Yes, that's all of them.
Okay.
That's quite enough killing and destruction.
Context, I would think, is just enormously important in this discussion. You saw that in some countries, one side had gotten help from an outside nation, money and weapons in particular. Who were they getting help from? What relationship did the outside countries have to the factions in the Civil War?
Sure. That varied a lot, actually. Sometimes it's, for example, in what we see in the Ukrainian case, you know, right now, where the outside state or government who's going to be intervening, giving money, help, sometimes military aid, right, is actually saying that they're protecting a minority, right, either linguistic or religious. So sometimes there is a kinship or connection. Sometimes it's ideology. So, for example, there are outside groups like Vietnam that became involved with the Khmer Rouge, right, helping them get power in Cambodia. But many times there's actually no kinship at all, and it's just a relationship based on sort of, you know, raw power politics. So, for example, Libya didn't like at all some of the goals of the National Front in Chad, Frelinat, but they gave them lots of support because once they got in power, right, they actually gave them territory back. There was a territorial dispute between Libya and Chad. So sometimes these civil wars, these rebel groups, are useful levers, right, for rivals and enemies outside of the
sure.
state. And so that has, you know, a big impact on the Civil War, but unfortunately it also has an impact after the Civil War when people are thinking, should I trust this government, right, would I vote for them, and knowing that, you know, whether they build democratic institutions or not.
How often does an outside player get the result they want?
Yeah, so it's a little less than a quarter of civil wars when they happen, although it really varies by what else is going on in the Civil War. So this is one of the interesting things of the study is these are dangerous relationships where you have this rival rebel alliance that's going on. And so, for example, in Ukraine, we might be very worried, for example, if Russia takes over Ukraine, installs a leader that's pro-Russian but would be very unpopular In Ukraine, why would they democratize then, right, if they're going to lose the elections, right? They're going to be forced to run, you know, from repression and undemocratic means. And so that's, you know, a very important thing to think about.
Could one draw the parallel that when bigger nations supply factions in smaller nations with money or weapons, it almost ends up being like the classic enabler from your 12-step programs? Is that in any way an accurate analogy to draw?
I think there's some of that. Although there's an addiction to some extent, right, to that external support. That in democracy, your power comes from the people. Right? Autocracy, your power has to come from somewhere else, not the people, either elites in the country, but it can also come from elites outside of the country. And so I think that's useful, although I would push back a little bit against this idea that you become addicted to it. I don't think it's necessarily addiction. I just think it's a rather tragic, cold logic that there's a market for support during a civil war. You're trying to win, and there's a market from outside. There's a supply of this type of aid, and it has rather tragic consequences after the civil war because, you know, trust is a hard thing to earn back.
And oftentimes, I imagine, if the outside force aligns with the successful party, there's an anticipation of some kind of ongoing relationship, some kind of payback over the longer haul.
Yes, absolutely.
Which can get very complicated, I'm sure.
Yes.
One of the things you're trying to do with this study is to forecast where democratization will happen after a civil war. Are there other factors that determine if a country will become more democratic after a civil war?
So this is one, I think, important relationship, the sort of rival-rebel alliance idea. The other thing that the study illuminated that's important is engagement with the outside world, trade openness, right? Being part of intergovernmental organizations that also have democracies. Democratic institutions need to be learned. They need to be built. They're not sort of prefabricated where you just sort of plop them down and you've got a capital and a constitution.
Certainly.
They take time. So actually having advisors, learning, having that support out there from the democratic community and engaging with that seems to make a difference, and it does seem to help.
So if democratic nations like ours want to help grow new democracies, what in your view is the best thing that established democracies can do?
So one of the, I think, the important things is they need to coordinate. One of the really big problems with these rival-rebel alliances is they win more often when the United Nations or other democratic nations aren't there to get them out. So while rival-rebel alliances are equally split between when the UN has boots on the ground in a civil war, for example, and when they don't, they never win when the UN becomes involved. So when the international community creates, you know, some stable structure, right, a counterbalance, you know, to these cold power politic logics, rarely do we have the same problem of having very unpopular leaders emerge from the civil war. So I think that's something that they can do. I think the Ukraine's an example where it doesn't necessarily have to be boots on the ground, but the EU, the US, and the UN has to be very cognizant of that a Russian-controlled, unpopular government in the Ukraine will not be democratic.
How do you keep your head around all of the dynamics in play in just the Middle East?
Oh, sure.
I mean, the Arab Spring happened after your study was finished, but that has to be that's an incredible laboratory, I suppose, in a way for democracy in such.
Yes, it's both an exciting and troubling time, you know, I think in the Middle East and around where, you know, one of the reasons people are interested in democratization after civil wars is they think, wow, isn't this a great time to build democracy, where you have these previous institutions, these, you know, a lot of times autocratic institutions have fallen, right? So you have sort of fertile ground for building something new. But what you build new doesn't necessarily have to be democracy. And this is what we're finding, that, you know, people have sort of changed from calling it the Arab Spring, you know, to the Arab uprisings and, you know, a little less optimistic. And I think the optimism varies a lot, where you have Tunisia, you know, which maybe you can be more optimistic about. It's a homegrown group that doesn't have many ties.
Egypt is a lot less predictable, correct?
Absolutely. And perhaps you might have had more democracy if you still had the Muslim Brotherhood, because they were more popular. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, you know, very severely Assyria, with entangling, you know, rivalries and alliances from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Iran, already becoming involved in that civil war. And right now, regardless of which side wins, they've sort of had to make very unpopular alliances just to get this far.
Well, it's so fascinating to consider what happens when the democratic process results in a more autocratic approach. Isn't that one of the huge conundrums that we're seeing play out here? Mohamed Morsi was democratically elected. Yanukovych was democratically elected, but they still generate an awful lot of opposition.
Yeah, no, I think it's very clear. Democracy is very hard. And if democracy doesn't work, right, if it doesn't deliver on some of its promises, people are going to seek, you know, economic growth, stability, security, all the things we need, right, in an institutional form, you know, that they hope will give it to them.
Michael, what are you watching most closely in the Ukraine situation?
Sure, two things. I'm tracking Ukrainian nationalism, right? I think this is one of these cases where Russia and Putin has to sort of be careful what they wish for, that I think they possibly could hold on to the Crimea with military force. But it has a very large non-Russian minority there that would not be happy with that. It would be an occupation. It would be costly, for sure. And that only grows if they continue and sort of marched on eastern Ukraine. You know, that proportion grows even bigger. At the same time, you have this dynamic where Ukraine, which has always been explained as sort of having weak nationalism, right? Lots of different groups, Tartars, Russians, right? Ukrainians there. Well, you know, they're becoming more nationalistic every day. You have people signing up for the military and other things. So you have a relatively weak government that just started, that called elections for May 25th. And Russia's actions are actually rallying people behind this government. And so it strikes me that there's quite a few counterproductive events happening for Russia itself.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank our guest, Professor Michael Colarisi, an associate professor in the Department of Political Science here at MSU. He is looking at, just concluded a study that looks at what happens when outside countries get involved in civil wars. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.